Justice is first, that freezes.
Famous last words.
Let's get stuck.
Can you hear me?
We can now. We missed you about 10 seconds.
The voice is still a little choppy.
Okay, well, let me know if it gets any better or any worse. Maybe I'll switch to my phone at some point, which seems to be in good shape, but may need to be charged. Okay. So last time we started talking about the relationship between Torah Shebechtav and Torah Shebaalpeh, right? And we went through the introduction of the Rambam in his Perush Mishnayot, where he outlines 5 different divisions of Torah Shebaalpeh. Just to refresh our memories, we talked about Torah Shebaalpeh, which is based on a pasuk, but also has a tradition. Then we talked about Torah Shebaalpeh, which has no pasuk, no basis in any pasuk anywhere. It's just Moshe was taught this way at Har Sinai, that this halakha exists, and there's no disagreement about that. And then the Rambam says there's another category, which are things that the rabbis derived from psukim, based on the midot that were given to them, based on the tools that were given to them. But these things have no tradition from Sinai. The midot themselves may be a tradition from Sinai, but the libudim that they came up with based on these midot have no basis in tradition itself.
Drop the drive, and we're going to get in trouble.
Where are you? You're blocking the...
Top to front of the drive. No,
that's obviously Wiesenberg has arrived, isn't it?
So there's that third section in the Rambam where he says that things are learned from the Psukim, but there's no tradition based on them. And then the fourth and the fifth we kind of skipped over because those are only Derabanan, and everything we've been talking about is supposed to be Daraita. And we quoted the Chavot Ya'ir of Yarev Bachrach, 18th century Gadol, who argued with the Rambam and said that he didn't understand where the Rambam was coming from, because the Rambam was very vociferous that these things that are learned from Psukim, but are derived from Psukim, about which there is much machloket. You know, 80% of Shas is machloket about how to learn certain things from Psukim. This one says you learn it this way, this one says you learn it that way, this one uses a gezeirah over this way, this one. That's, you know, that's most of the back and forth in the Talmud. And the Rambam says it must be that none of that is actually from tradition, because there's no way that any of those things could have been forgotten. If they were based on tradition, the rabbis aren't so careless that they would just forget the way that these dinim work. And Rav Yair Bachrach said, yes, they did. They did. They forgot. What can you do? People forget things. And that's where this all comes from. But the flip side is, he says that for most of those things, there was a tradition from Sinai. In fact, he may even believe that everything is a tradition from Sinai. It's just that over time, things get forgotten, things get confused. And that's where the machloket in the Gemara comes from. Now, we took that and we learned 2 other sources. One was the Shla, and the other was of Hirsch.
Have you
read
motorcycle. I mean, that's 2 different opinions. The other is that it's a set of criteria that allows to extrapolate.
That's what the Rambam says. Okay. That's what the Rambam says. And of course, Rav Yair Bachrach doesn't disagree that these midot and nidrashot, you know, exist. He just says that there was one single way to learn all of these things, and it was given at Sinai, and it was forgotten, and so we're trying to reconstruct it, right? We went on, we learned 2 more sources, which I personally think are connected. They don't have to be connected. They weren't talking about the same issue. But there were 2 different ways of describing Torah Shebaalpeh, which I think are 2 different ways. One was the Shla, who says that the Mishnah is called the Mishnah because it's a Mishneh LaMelech. That the real Melech is a Torah Shebichtav, and the job of the Mishnah is to explain the Torah Shebichtav. The Torah Shebichtav is the core. It's the real thing. And the Mishnah's job is to kind of carry out the directives of the Melech, which is the Torah Shebichtav. Whereas Rav Hirsch reversed that in a revolutionary idea, and he said that no, it's more like the Torah Shebaalpeh is the tradition of the original lecture, right? And the Torah Shebichtav is just the notes. When you write notes, you write shorthand. So the Torah Shebichtav has all these, you know, black and white statements with extra little hints inside of them, which reveal, or if you know how to read them properly, then you can actually reconstruct the original lecture. But ultimately, the original lecture is really better contained in the Tarash Valpeh than it is in the Tarash Bechtav. So out of Hirsch's mind, right, and in his understanding, the Torah is much bigger than the Tarash Bechtav. When we think of Torah given at Sinai, it's much bigger than Tarash Bechtav. It cannot be encapsulated in a single book because it's much, much bigger. It can only be jotted down as notes, and then afterwards try to reconstruct it. That's what the job of the Tarash Baal Peh is, to help us reconstruct that. Okay, so and I wanted to connect that to the Rambam and the Chavot Yair, where the Rambam says that the job of the Tarash Baal Peh is in fact to explain what's going on in the Tarash Bechtav, right? And that fits well with the Shlah, because ultimately the Rambam says not everything was given at Sinai. And so the Mishnah is there to explain things. Whereas the Rav Hirsch might fit better with the Chavad Yair, because Rav Hirsch believes that everything was given at Sinai. It's just that things got forgotten and they had to be reconstructed based on the notes. Okay? Yeah, you can quibble with that if you will. That's my own connection between the two. Now we'll continue forward. Okay? I don't know how far we'll get. I have more on my computer than you guys have in your hands, but we'll see how far we get. The next thing that I wanted to talk about is, what difference does it make? What does it matter? Does it matter if something is Torah Shmechtav or Torah Shabbat? You guys tell me, what difference does it make if something is considered Torah Shmechtav, written explicitly in the Torah, or if it's only Torah Shom, only Torah Shabbat? Are there any salient differences, both intellectually and maybe in halakha?
When you say Torah Shebaal Peh, is that synonymous with Midrabanan?
No, absolutely not.
No?
No, absolutely not.
Why not?
Because Dirabanan is Dirabanan. It's a totally different thing. Dirabanan are things that the rabbis definitely invented, made them up on their own. And Torah Shebaal Peh are things that the rabbis either say are a tradition from Sinai, or according to the Rambam, are derived from the Torah as being the intention of the Torah. That's what the Torah Shebaal Peh is claiming. It's claiming to know the intention of the Torah. When a rabbi says, okay, we learned this from the Pasuk based on a Hekesh or based on a Gzera Shavah or something like that, they're saying this is what God meant when he said this. Whether that's known from tradition or whether it's derived.
So what is your question? Is it stronger? Is it better? What was
the
question?
Is one or the other in some way stronger, or I don't know.
Well, Torah Shebichtav is the source, and Torah Shebaal Peh represents an interpretation of the source. And because it represents an interpretation of the source, it's open to interpretation.
Okay, more so than Torah Shebichtav. You realize that Rav Hirsch would, of course, disagree with that. I don't disagree with you, but Rav Hirsch would disagree with that, that it's merely interpretation. And the Chabad Yair would also seemingly disagree with that, because he says it's all based on Masoret. That right. Everything that's in Torah Shebaal Peh is from Masorah. So,
but Simon, according to what you're saying, what is the practical difference? Even if we do accept that one is the source and one is interpretation, is there a practical difference? I think that's a question before.
Right. I think it's very little practical difference.
I think that there's a different view on this. We always refer to the earlier source, right?
Say that again, Dave.
The older, the closer to Sinai, the more truthful, the more...
I've given it Sinai.
Torah Shebaal Peh was given at Sinai.
I think there's more room for... We could argue that there's more room for dilution and abstraction and misinformation in...
I guess what you're saying
because it's Baal Peh.
We're certain because it's written down. So we're certain that it's an original form. Whereas Torah Shebaal Peh... It may be that it's a tradition, it may be that it's not, but it's at least been filtered through the generations.
That's exactly. It's like writing in COBOL. You just know that it's solid. Some people are in JS Node. They're crazy. You could change it any time.
Jake, you don't know what you're talking about. Anyways.
if that's the case, if you want to go along that argument to say Tersha Bechtal was written down, therefore it's you know, it couldn't be wrong because it's written down, why was there so much resistance to writing down the Mishnah?
Good. So that's exactly, well, I mean, we'll talk about that. But let's use that as the springboard for the first source that we're going
to
see.
That connects to what Jake was saying with regards to how accurate it is. and how it may have been changed and adjusted over years, because it's tradition.
So let's see. So the Gemara in Gittin says, it has a machloket, strange machloket, between Rav Elazar and Rav Yochanan. Rav Elazar says the greater portion of the Torah.
Is this in here?
It should be on the second page, on the second sheet. What difference does it make? Yeah. The greater portion of the Torah is contained in the written law, and only the smaller portion was transmitted orally. As it says, though I wrote for him the major portion of the precepts of my law, they were counted as a strange thing. Katavti rov torotai hema kazar nechshavu. So Rav Elazar says that between the Torah Shebaal Peh and the Torah Shebichtav, the bigger thing is the Torah Shebichtav. Because Hashem said, I wrote for him the major portion. Rav Yochanan disagrees. Rav Yochanan says, the greater part was transmitted orally, and only the smaller part is contained in the written law, as it says, for by the mouth of these words. Apiat v'rayim ha'eleh. What does he make of the words, though, I write? So, apiat v'rayim ha'eleh, excuse me, ka'ati etchem brit. I've made this covenant with you on basis of these things that are in the mouth, right? Apiat v'rayim, which is oral. So what does Rabbi Yochanan do with Rabbi Elazar, and what does Rabbi Elazar do with Rabbi Yochanan? So what does Rabbi Yochanan do with, though I wrote for him the major portion of my law? So he says, no, it's not a question, it's not a statement, it's a question. Should I have written for him the major portion of my law? Even now, it is not accounted a strange thing for him. Everybody here watch The Simpsons?
Yeah.
Okay, one of my favorite lines in The Simpsons. Favorite lines in The Simpsons is when Homer needs a lawyer, and he sees in the classified ads, he sees the ad that says, it's a lawyer. What is it called? It says free consultation, no down payment. Okay. So he goes to the lawyer. He gets his consultation, and then the lawyer asks for money at the end. And Homer says, "No, it says in the paper it's free." He says, "No. It's a typo. It should say free consultation. No money down." That's what it said. So, you know, it's all in where you put the it's all in where you put the punctuation.
It's a punctuation.
So he changes it from a statement to a rhetorical question, in which case, no, of course it's not I didn't write down the major portion of my law. And what does Rav Elazar do? What does the other one make of the words for by the mouth of these words? That implies they are difficult to master. Okay. So Apiat Vayim Ha'ilah means that they're difficult to master. Okay, fine. Now what difference does it make? So we'll get to what difference make in a minute, but the difference between Torah Shebaal Peh and Torah Shebichtav is actually outlined in the next line. Rabbi Yehuda bar Nachmani, the public orator of Rabbi Shimon Lakish, discourses as follows: "It is written, write thou these words, and it is written for according to the mouth of these words." These are the two statements that we just saw above. What are we to make of this? It means the words which are written, thou art not at liberty to say by heart, and the words transmitted orally, they are not at liberty to recite from writing, right? In Hebrew, this is Dvarim Shebichtav Yata Yefshal Omran Baal Peh. The Dvarim Shebaal Peh Yata Yefshal Chotvan Bichtav. Right? You're not allowed to write down Torah Shebaal Peh. You're not supposed to recite Torah Shebichtav out loud. These are the two least kept mitzvot in the Torah. Okay? Wow. There is nothing less kept than these two. By Orthodox Jews.
Is it actually
okay?
A mitzvah?
That's a machlokes about whether it's daraisa or darabanan. And with nafkaminas, for example, if it's daraisa, then what does it mean for Nevi'im and Ketuvim? Right? If we would assume that this din is daraisa, so then you should only not be allowed to say out loud, or baal peh rather, things from Torah. But there should be no problem with saying things from Navi and Ketuvim, which Tosos entertains. We don't conclude that way. So it's most likely divrei sofrim. It's most likely a not rabbinic, but some mitzvah from the period of time of Navi.
Our shas is covered with pesukim based on the whole Tanakh.
Yeah, sure. Usually not folk pesukim, but yeah. For sure, the Gemara says that the prohibition of writing down the Torah Shebaal Peh was, you know, is gone. That's why Rabbi Yehuda Anasi wrote down the Mishnayot, because he was afraid that people would forget the Torah Shebaal Peh. So he had to write it down, which was allowed because based on a pasuk of Eid Lasot Hashem Hepeur Torah Techa. When it's for the good of the Torah, you're allowed to abolish something in the Torah, which is, you know, that's a Pandora's box right there. We're not going to get into it. But what about the inverse, about reciting Baal Peh Psukim from the Torah? There's no record that that was ever abolished, but people do it all the time, right? Here, watch. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad. We do that all the time. We have no problem doing that. Oh, so tefillah might be actually worse. So one opinion in Tosafot, which is recorded in Shulchan Aruch, says that it's okay to recite Psukim by heart as long as you're not trying to be motzi another person. That's one opinion. In other words, you can do it unless you're actually trying to say the pasuk on behalf of someone else. So the pasuk part of the kiddush is not actually, you're not trying to be motzi anybody. When are you trying to be motzi somebody? Kriyata Torah. Where, yeah, exactly. You have to read. In a situation where in the midst, yeah, and that's why you have to read. You have to read it from the Torah. That's one opinion in Tosafot. So let's suffice with that opinion. There are a lot of opinions. But you see
that,
here.
That might be the objection to writing down the Mishnah.
That what?
The words which are written, you shouldn't say by heart, is Kriya Satara. You cannot be Yotze Kriya by saying it by heart.
Okay.
Whereas the words that are transmitted orally.
Why shouldn't you write that down?
Because the whole point of them was that they were supposed to be remembered, because they were supposed to be evolving and learned. They were supposed to be learned, not. They were supposed to be a dialogue. They were always meant to be a dialogue. They were never meant to be written down, because they were never meant to be static.
Okay.
That was the objection to the Mishnah.
Right.
The Mishnah was, don't write this down, because there's a halacha. Don't write down the oral rule. Why? Because then it no longer becomes something which is discussed and evolved and can be applied.
You made an assumption there when you said evolved, right?
Yeah.
Aside from the changing part,
okay.
If we assumed that it was all known from tradition, I know that I keep going back to this. So then there was nothing to discuss. They knew it. There was no machlokas.
The assumption is Torah Semes and that's it.
No, the assumption is that at some point we had all the facts. Not that the Torah Semes doesn't contain
everything.
One
true Torah.
Yeah.
And we just lost it.
Yeah, that's what the Chavos Ya'ir says, and that's presumably what Hirsch means, right? I mean, the Rambam objects to that.
So it's based on that he believes there was a logic that was put in place.
And we'll get back to this. Is I think a theme that comes up over and over. These are two different ways of viewing Tarash about that.
You've got Chinese whispers in the and that's why you write down Mishnah, possibly. Because
you found people are
forgetting.
But you look at the format, both the Mishnah and the Gemara. Yeah, but the format, the way
that it was
written down, is still there to be learnt and discussed rather than to be dictatorial in a way. The way that Torah is.
It was meant to be, well, yes. I mean, the reason why the Torah Shabbat Peh was always going to have to be discussed wasn't necessarily because they were going to forget things, but also because it had to be applied all the time. Life was changing.
Law is always discussed.
It wasn't necessarily the Torah that was changing. It was the world that was changing. And every new situation that came up needed to be seen through the prism of law and said, well, how does this fit into what we already know, right? So that's one. That would be one reason why it would have to always be discussed. But it doesn't necessarily mean that it couldn't be written down. I mean, they were the Braita was, you know, and the Mishnayot were things that they were trying to keep in the minds of people. They would have all kinds of tricks to remember.
It's just interesting. It's a question of having that only ever the Rambam's view.
Right, so here, take a look. So take a look at the Be'er Shem. Yeah, that's the original way to do it. It was to memorize them.
It doesn't matter whether it's Be'er Shem or not.
So take a look at the Be'er Shem over here. So the Be'er Shem says, how could Rav Yochanan and Rav Elazar argue about this? Isn't it obvious that Rav Yochanan is right, that the majority of Torah is Torah Shabbat Peh? Look at Shas. And look at Tanakh, right? You count the pages, count the words. No new Tanakh is ever being written, right? But Torah Shabbat Peh is being written all the time. Every new Sefer that comes out is more Torah Shabbat Peh. Even Rashi is Torah Shabbat Peh. So how could the Be'er Shavah is right after the Gemara that I quoted you. So how could Rav Elazar ever say that? Oh, the Torah Shebichtav is the majority. So he says they're actually arguing about exactly this point. Venirli Sharashi Hirgish Bekushizu. Rashi figured this out. The Svarat Rav Elazar Shamar Ruba Bichtav. Rabbi Elazar saw everything that you learn from the psukim based on midot as part of Torah Shebichtav. He considered that part of Torah Shebichtav. Venu nechlal b'Torah Shebichtav l'svarat Rabbi Elazar. Ella, so what's Torah Shebichtav according to Rabbi Elazar? The second category of the Rambam. He's defining what he says the words Torah Shebichtav. What he means is everything written in the Torah plus everything learned from the words in the Torah. So what's he not including? Aravot, Hatarat Nedarim. The malachos of Shabbos, maybe, right? Anything that has no basis in the words of Torah was Darabanans, yeah, but even not Darabanans. Again, ignoring Darabanans, anything that was taught to Moshe at Sinai but finds no remez in the Torah, which is quite a number of things. You know, the color of tefillin and et cetera, things like that. Okay? That's what the Lord is saying. What's that, Simon?
What's the Shabbos?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know whether he's including Shabbos or not, but I presume yes.
What's his basis for saying that?
What's Be'er Shavah or Rabbi Elazar?
Be'er Shavah.
He's trying to figure out, well, Rashi seems to say it, but he's trying to figure out how could Rabbi Elazar say that most of Torah is Torah Shebichtav when it's obvious that it's not. So he says, oh, so what's Rabbi Yochanan think? Rabbi Yochanan says, Ruba al peki kol mashin yidral yidei gamimu to shadram, yeshlam smach bakatub, nimshu al peh v'sinai. Rabbi Yochanan thinks those things are Torah Shebaal Peh. They're arguing about, I don't know if it's semantics, but they're arguing about categorizations. Ein ha-machlok etalei b'metziut, ela im mash nidrash al yud gemumi, im Torah Shebichtav, or Torah Shebaal Peh. Now, what's the kunz over here? The Be'er Shavah kind of leaves us in the lurch. What's the difference, right? They're just coming up with, the machlok is about how to call it Torah Shebichtav or Torah Shebaal Peh.
Where's the left?
Yeah, I mean, what's
huge
the difference?
Conceptual difference.
What's the conceptual difference?
I go back to Sukkah. Sukkah is always my go-to. When Hashem said the Skotesh Rishabatim, did he at that point say it has to be this high, this big, made from this, not made from that? Or did he just say Sukkah and everyone knew what Sukkah was?
So Rabbi Elazar.
The same way, if you said today you're not allowed to use your phone while you're driving. In 20 years or 30 years' time, right now,
no,
I can tell you
an analogy. Your Sukkah example, okay?
Yeah.
So Rabbi Elazar would say what? Rabbi Elazar, who says that everything that was learned from the Torah is considered Torah Shebichtav, he would say what?
He would say conceptually that everything that is learned from that word Sukkah was given there and then as a clear-cut halacha.
Okay.
Meaning that Hashem didn't just say Sukkah, he gave you all of the definitions.
So that, like the Chabot Yair. That it was all taught right then and there.
Yeah.
Defined. All taught right then and there. And what is Rabbi Yochanan?
Meaning Torah Semes. Rabbi Yochanan goes more to the Rambam, which is to say that is Torah Shebaal Peh.
So you want to fit the Chabad Yair and the Rambam into Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar. It's interesting. Look, I'm saying, that's why I brought it over here, because I was wondering, can we do that?
I think it's an interesting way to look at it.
Like 16th, 17th century, I think.
Before the
century.
Right. But it's a way you conceptualize it, meaning these are system. Is it a system of rules to extrapolate what would have been meant, or was it Torah Semes that's exactly what was meant?
I was almost wondering if maybe according to the Shabbat, if you have a halachic nafkamina, right? If according to Rabbi Elazar, the drushos are considered Torah Shebichtav, then in the context of the Gemara, couldn't you then write down the drashot?
Because
it's Torah Shebichtav.
Oof.
I mean, we don't follow Rabbi Elazar, because Rabbi Yochanan we usually follow. But halachically, I would expect that according to Rabbi Elazar, we would be able to write down.
Because it's Torah Shebichtav.
Yeah.
anything that was a drosh of Yud Gimel.
Anything that was a drosh based on the Yud Gimel Mida, I would expect that you'd be allowed to write it down. That would I would expect to be the concrete halachic nafkamin between the two of them. Okay, here is a. I'm going to give you one fundamental difference and then one technical difference, but both very important. If you learn nothing else, these are extremely important principles. Okay, so this is a Magen Avraham. A Magen Avraham, I think, Simon, I think you walked in at this point in the Shir on Shavuos. So a Magen Avraham is of Avram Gambiner, 19th century Gadol. Basically, before the Mishnah Berurah, he was the Mishnah Berurah. Everybody followed the Magen Avraham. The Mishnah Berurah quotes the Magen Avraham left and right. What?
Same person.
Who? Who's the same person? The Magen Avraham is not the Mishnah Berurah. The Magen Avraham was the authority on Or Chaim. He wrote a commentary on Or Chaim. Everybody quoted it. So the Magen Avraham writes in Siman Nun, which is where the Shulchan Aruch talks about how you're supposed to learn every day. I think he's talking about Shnayim Mikra Vechatargum, if I'm not mistaken. And here he says, "Lilmod b'kol yom, nearly dafka b'zmaneim she'u mevinim lashon targum, aval achshav she'in mevinim tzrichim lilmod lahavin, dimlokein eno nechshav l'limud." Okay? He already said something, but I'm going to hold off. He says, you know, the proper thing to do is to learn Shnayim Mikra Vechatargum. You learn the Torah twice, and then you learn the Targum Onkelos once. He says, but that's what they used to do. But nowadays, except for the Teimanim, most people don't do this anymore because
we don't understand it.
We don't understand the Targum Onkelos better than we understand the text in the Torah. So what's the point? V'af b'tfila mutav lihitpalel b'loshen shomevin. He says, in theory, it's better to daven in a language that they understand. However, he says, nevertheless, it's understandable that we continue to daven in Hebrew, even if you don't speak fluent tefillah Hebrew, because ultimately the purpose is for Hashem to understand your tefillah, not necessarily for you to understand your tefillah, because you're talking to God. However, aval, here's the line, im omer ha-mishnah, ve'eno mevin, eno nikra limod, l'chein tzachim l'mod ha-perush. However, if you learn a Mishnah, okay, you're learning Ezim Makoman, or you're learning El Dvarim Shein Lehem Shir in your tefillah, and you're just reciting the words, you did nothing. If you don't know what the words mean, not only are you not davening, you're not even learning Torah. That's what the Magen Avraham says. Now, to make this even clearer and starker, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Roshei Zalman Miliadi, and the Shulchan Aruch Harav, he wrote a monumental work on Talmud Torah. He really, what the Chavetz Chaim did for Shmirat HaLashon, so the Roshei Zalman Miliadi did for Talmud Torah. He expanded the section in Shulchan Aruch about Talmud Torah. And he says, "B'me dvarim amurim, b'Torah shvichtav, avo b'Torah shebalpei, meinu meivin haperush, einu nechshav limud klal." What did he say? He said that it's worth learning Torah shvichtav even if you don't understand what's happening. Just reading it is a mitzvah of Talmud Torah. However, Torah Shebal Peh, without understanding, is not considered limud at all. Okay, so your pintala chassid sitting, your ignoramus chassid who's sitting and learning Mishnayot without understanding anything, he's just reading them. He's not learning. He's not doing anything.
The Torah Shebal Peh is just an interpretation of Torah Shebal Peh. Otherwise, why
I don't think so. It's an argument that Torah Shebal Peh, in its essence, needs to be understood in order to be considered a kiyum. We'll see why in a second. Rav Salvejig is going to tell us the secret over here in a second. Nevertheless, Roshei Zalman HaMeleadi can't control himself. He has to say, nevertheless, you know, it's not a waste of time to learn Mishnayot that you don't understand. Because even if you don't understand them now, even if you don't understand them now, they will stand in your stead in the future in Olam Haba. Basically, the Mishnayot that you simply read now, so you'll keep them in Olam Haba, and then you'll understand them. Okay, leave that to the side. Don't know exactly what he means. Rabbi Gil's student is the author of a very prominent blog, and a rabbi in Brooklyn. So he said on this, I was taught in the name of Rabbi Salvechik that the Bible, Torah Shebichtav, is inherently Torah. It's a chefta of Torah. Oral Torah only has sanctity as explanation and interpretation. Maybe that's what you're saying, Avi, which require understanding. If you don't understand Torah Shebal Peh, then you're not learning Torah.
That's the idea.
However,
it comes from the fact that it's an explanation of
which requires understanding. Which requires understanding. It's in a sense man-made, but not man-made necessarily. It's just it needs to be comprehended in order to be to exist. If you're talking about it, you understand. Yeah. What the Chiddush is that Torah Shebichtav does something, even if you don't understand it. Sitting there reading Tehillim, and David, you know, composed some very hard Tehillim, reading the Tehillim without understanding it, you did something.
It has an experiential element to it.
But even without experience, in Eo, okay, you don't understand anything. It's got some kind of
Kedusha.
Yeah, it's got some. I don't know if it's metaphysical. I don't know if it's just mitzvah. It's got efficacy to it. It's concrete. It's real. Okay, that's the difference. That's fundamental difference between Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaalpeh. Now, what about a technical difference? Okay, thank you, David. What about a technical difference? So, this is a technical difference you're probably aware of, but you don't know all the details about it. You've heard the phrase "Mutav Shiyu Shogegin Valyu Mezidin," right? If somebody is doing something by accident, and you know that by telling them they're just going to do it on purpose, then you shouldn't say anything, right? Better to keep your mouth shut, right? So here's the actual source. The source is actually Gemara in Yuma, and the Shulchan Aruch brings that Gemara in Yuma as the example. Nashim she'ochlot v'shotot ad shechashecha, v'hen einan yodot she'mitzvah la'osif mechol al ha'kodesh, en mamachin biyadan kedei she'lo tavol la'asot bezadon. If you have women, the women used to eat all the way until Shkia on Erev Yom Kippur. Sounds fine. Men don't do that because men go to shul for Kol Nidre. Right, so they have to stop anyways, you know, a short while, at least a short while, before Shkia. No man eats all the way up to Shkia. But a woman, if she stays home, then she might want to, you know, to load up. So she'll eat until a minute before Shkia, and then she'll stop, right? And this is wrong. You're not supposed to do that. There's a mitzvah midaraita of Tosefet Inui on Erev Yom Kippur. It's wrong. You have to add on to the Inui. Now, the men did it automatically, whether they knew it or they didn't know it, didn't matter. But the women weren't doing it because if they weren't going to shul, so then and they didn't know this, so they wouldn't do it. So the Gemara in Yuma says you don't tell them about this. Why? Why? Because they won't listen to you. They're gonna say that's ridiculous. I'm gonna eat all the way till Yom Kippur, and we don't want to do that. We'd rather they do it by accident than they do it on purpose. Okay. The Rama says the Huhadin Bikoldavar Isor. And the Rama extends this because, by the way, that was the example in the Gemara. There is no other example in the Gemara. But the Rama jumps in and says, this is true for everything. Amin and Mutav Shishokin, Velo Yumizidin. But then the Rama adds on his own extra piece. Vidavka She'eno Mufurash Batora. Af Mishudaraita. Avali Mufurash Batora, Mochin Biyadan. He quotes the Ran and the Rosh, who say that this is Mutav Shishokin is only for Davar She'eino Mefurash BaTorah, things that are not explicit in the Torah. What do you think that is? If something was explicit in the Torah, then you should say something, even if they're going to continue to do it, you have to say something. But if it's not explicit in the Torah, then you don't have to say anything.
It seems that something explicit in the Torah has more chashivut. It's more important.
So you think it's more fundamental that we're...
That's what it seems to say.
We really don't want people to do something that was written explicitly in the Torah, but Torah Shebaal Peh, you know what, it's okay if they don't do it. That's how you see it, Dad?
That's what's apparent from the first reading of this, yes.
Okay, could be.
So we see it the writer.
Yeah. What do you mean when you say we see it? Do you mean
it? Please repeat what he said. I couldn't hear it. We couldn't hear him. Please repeat what he said.
Okay.
The view of
you're saying it's viewed by people as being less. And so what? So what if it's viewed by people as less?
And therefore
you can be more maker. You can be more maker because people. But is it actually less? Is it actually less? So take a look at the next line in the Rama. The Rama says, "V'im yodea she'ein dvarav nishmain lo yomar berabim lo chichan rak pam echad, aval lo yarbe betochachot me'achar she'yodea she'lo yishmai lav aval biyachid chayv." What's the key over here? The key, according to the Rama, is will you be listened to or not? That's the key. Then the Mishnah Berurah explains. He says, The Mishnah Berurah doesn't, Dad, he disagrees. He says the real thing that's going on over here is, he says, like Uri said, with things that are Torah Shebichtav, you can point to the Torah and say, look, it says in the Torah that you're not allowed to start fires on Shabbat. You see that it says in the Torah that you're not allowed to eat chazir, and you're not allowed to eat, and you're not allowed to cook meat and milk together. But then you go and you say to them, you're not allowed to eat milk and meat together. They'll say to you, where does it say that in the Torah? I don't believe you. And you know what? Them saying, I don't believe you, means that they're still somewhat tamim. They're still shogigim. They're still shogigim in a certain way. But they're not really shogigim because they at least know. But they're not going to listen to you because you can't prove it to them. Whereas something that is mefurash bakra, you proved it to them. So if they don't do it, it's you know, there's nothing you can do for them. So it's not fundamental. It's just a technical point. The technical difference between Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaalpeh is that Torah Shebichtav is black and white. There's nothing to discuss. There's nothing to debate. No, there's the Tzedukim, and then there's the Karaim as well.
Man.
Okay. I see it's 11 o'clock. We'll go a few more minutes. We'll start this. There's more, but we'll start this. Okay. Okay. Here is, this I think is the most exciting part. And the question that we've all been waiting for. What was given at Sinai? Oh. Ultimately.
What's it make a difference?
What was given at Sinai?
Why does it make a difference?
Right? Well, it's kind of a difference for the Rambam and the Chavos Yair debate. But it makes a difference once you see how far the rabbis go with the things that they say. Then it makes a difference, right? You know, we're all aware of some of the statements that the rabbis make. We'll look at two examples of them right here. The seemingly hyperbolic statements. Gemara in Brachos, right at the beginning, Daf Hey, Amar B'Levi Bracha, Amar Rabbi Shimon Lakish, my son quoted this in his Dvar Torah at his Bar Mitzvah. Mai Dichti Ve'etna Lecha Et Luchot Ha'Evin Ve'Torah Ve'Mitzvah Asher Katavti L'Horotam, Pasuk in Mishpatim, Luchot Elu Aseret HaDibrot. So far, so good. Okay. Torah Ze Mikra. Okay, that's all of Chumash. Okay. Ve'Mitzvah Zu Mishnah. Asher katavti ilu nevim uchtuvim. Lahorotam ze Talmud. Melamed shekulam nitnu b'moshe b'har Sinai. Everything was given at Har Sinai. Tanakh, Torah shebaal peh, Gemara. Mishnah and Gemara. Everything. Everything was given at Sinai. The Yerushalmi takes it even further. Very similar statement. Rabbi Shur b'levi amar aleim ba'aleim kechol adrayim hadvarim. Mikra Mishnah Talmud Agada Afilu Masha Talmud Vatik Atid Lahorot. Some Girsot have Lish'ol. Even the questions that a student is going to ask in question in Shir. This discussion that we're having right now took place at Har Sinai.
Beautiful.
Right now, these words are at Har Sinai. Why? Because people are going to say, "Rei davar zachadashu." People are going to say, "Oh, look, I have a chiddush." Meshivo chaver v'mudar kvar yelo alamim. David, everything you thought of saying tonight, it's not new. It's been said before. It might have been said in your name originally. What?
A lot of Agadic Gemara that will contradict it mentioned last week.
So the first Agadic Gemara that will contradict it is so the next one on the sheet. And even before you get there, that's the next one. So the Gemara in Menachos, okay, one of the most famous Gemaras in Shas. This is the time traveling Gemara. Rabbi Yehuda said the name of Rav. When Moses ascended on high, he found HaKadosh Baruch Hu engaged in affixing karnes to the letters. He was putting the tagin on the otiyot, right? The little chipchicks on the top of every letter, okay? And Moshe says, Mima akev biyadecha. Why are you wasting time on this? Like, what's the point of this? So Hashem says to him, there will arise a man at the end of many generations, Akiva ben Yosef by name, this is Rabbi Akiva, who will expound on each tittle heaps and heaps of law. Tilim betilim shal halachot. for every kutzo shel yud, every single little dot, he's going to learn mounds of laws. What'd you say, Jake?
This is makev bazeh, and that's makev bazeh.
No, Moshe is asking, why are you wasting time? And Hashem says, because I need to put this in so that Rabbi Akiva can darshan every single one of these little things.
And the whole notion is they're intertwined. There is a huge intertwining between those two components.
Which components?
Between the godly components, and they're not slowing each other down. He wasn't, this is a notion that he's involved in every component. And it's not slowing down. They're interlocked. One is with the other. You can't have that without the other.
Okay. Okay. So what did Hashem answer to Moshe? So Moshe, he said to Moshe, sorry, what did Moshe say to Hashem? So he said, I want to see this, Rabbi Akiva. Akiva ben Yosef. So Hashem said, don't worry about it. Turn around. You know, get into the phone booth and I send you like...
Beat me down, Scotty.
No, I send you like Bill and Ted into the future. Okay? Oh, Bill and Ted went into the past, actually. No, they also went into the future. Yeah. So I send you like Bill and Ted into the future. It's okay if you don't know what I'm talking about. That's fine. It's Keanu Reeves. So he replied, turned around. Moses went and sat down behind 8 rows. Okay? That means he sat in the back of the class. Sat in the back of Rabbi Akiva's class, and he listened, and he couldn't understand anything that was going on. Rabbi Akiva is talking, and Moshe Rabbeinu is like, what is happening? And it depressed him. Chal Shodate, he got upset. He's like, well, I don't understand. I'm Moshe Rabbeinu. How could I not understand a shir in Torah? So what happened? And all of a sudden, Rabbi Akiva stopped, and one of the students asked, Rabbi, how do you know this? And Rabbi Akiva responded, oh, it's halacha l'Moshe Misinai. And at that point, Moshe was comforted. Thereupon, he returned to the Holy One. Okay, the rest of the Gemara is irrelevant for us right now. What happened? Even just forget the fact that this Gemara, you know, seems to contradict the previous Gemaras. How could Moshe not be aware of things if everything was given to him? What's going on internally? Why couldn't he follow the shir?
Either because it was simplistically known, meaning he didn't even have to think to darshan what was going on there because he knew it all.
Interesting.
Or
so then, why was he confused though? Just
because he didn't understand the longest behind it.
He didn't understand what he was talking about.
He didn't understand how he got to interpret it in that way because he knew the interpretation was already inherent.
Okay, and then why did he feel better afterwards?
Because he felt that they were still getting to the ikkar. Something that was already given. So ultimately, the result was the same. No matter how they got there, the result was the same.
Okay. Did he hear the conclusions in Rabbi Akiva? I'm just curious. Did he hear the conclusions? Like, was he confused by the conclusion, or was he confused by the path?
I think he was confused by the shit.
Okay.
But
and then why was he comforted? Why was he comforted?
Okay, that's it was the same.
It was the same. Okay. Okay.
I'm giving interpretation.
And do you want to try to tell me how we reconcile this with the previous Gemaras or no?
That it was all there. You just didn't need it to be explained to him. Didn't need you Gimel Midos. You Gimel Midos were a mechanism for us, not for Moshe Rabbeinu.
Okay.
Not even for the people that were Har Sinai.
Okay.
The argument of saying, I say Sukkah, you know what I mean.
Right.
Did we know exactly what it was? Yes, because we inherently knew that this is what it means. Okay.
But I'm going to leave us here. Okay, I'm going to leave you this quandary.
Whoa.
And next time we'll look at some answers.
You're leaving us at a cliffhanger here.
Yeah, I'm going to leave it to think about this, both about the contradiction here and about the eternal Gemara. But B'Shamayim, we'll get to also. We'll get to that one as well. All right.
Sure.
I want to wish you guys a good night.
Yeah.